It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
And welcome to the WUKY Sports Page podcast. Glad to have you with us. Our special guest today is Oliver Barnett, former All-American defensive lineman at Kentucky. Played for the Wildcats from 1986 through 1989. Had school records with 43 tackles for loss, 26 quarterback sacks, and 12 forced fumbles. The sacks record stood until last year when broken by Josh Allen, another in a great line of Kentucky defensive players. Named All-SEC, Oliver was an All-America as a junior and senior. Played in the Senior Bowl, the Blue-Gray All-Star Games, and he was chosen by the Atlanta Falcons in the NFL draft in the third round. Played 6 years in the NFL with the Falcons, the Buffalo Bills, the San Francisco 49ers, and it's quite a career. We want to catch up with him now on that. And Oliver, first of all, glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Keith. Glad to be here.
You had a very recent honor. Let's talk about that first, and that was you were named an SEC legend, and legends, one from each school, will be honored at the 2019 SEC Football Weekend of Champions. That's December 6th and 7th in Atlanta. They'll also be recognized at the SEC Championship football game on Saturday, December 7th. So you're representing Kentucky. Quite an honor there, too.
It is. I'm very honored to be selected for that. Just like, you know, a couple years ago, I was selected to the UK College Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see that, you know, all the hard work that I put in the UK, I'm being recognized for it. Coach Stoops is doing a wonderful job about getting very talented players on UK's team, and it's nice to see that you know, a lot of guys now can help UK turn into a winning program.
And it's important, too, to the players who played in your era and even farther back are being recognized, and you still feel part of the program. It's nice to have that connection, isn't it?
It is. My son, Elijah Barnett, is a current player for UK right now. And when they first opened up the new facility, we got a chance to tour and walk around, and I got to go into the defensive line room and the defensive unit room, and there was a big poster-like picture of me and several other players that were, you know, key players for the University of Kentucky. It's an honor to see that, you know, they're recognizing some of the older guys that, you know, came before the guys that they're now.
Mm-hmm. And to join this SEC legend group, you'll be seeing players from different eras and different schools, but it should be exciting to meet with those guys. You may know a few of them, or you may be getting to meet some new people there, but it should be quite an event.
It is. I'm very excited to go and represent the University of Kentucky there. I wish that UK was playing in the championship game, but, you know, due to some freak injuries this year, it kind of stymied the progress. But, you know, we still got a lot to play for, and the guys can, you know, still make it to a bowl game. But yeah, I was, you know, really shocked to see some of the names of past players that represented UK at the SEC championship game. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised on the number of guys that weren't on the list.
Yeah, it's a tough list to make, and obviously a lot of great players are never going to be named to this list. So, again, quite a distinction for you to be named as an SEC legend representing the University of Kentucky. And, again, that's coming up during the SEC Football Weekend of Champions, December 6th and 7th in Atlanta, also in conjunction with the SEC Championship game. Well, let's go back to when you first became interested in sports as a child. I mean, you have size and strength, of course. Were you always among the bigger kid as you played games as a child? Or did you have interest in all sports? How did that develop for you?
Actually, believe it or not, when I was younger, I used to, you know, have seizures, and my mother didn't want me to, you know, really be involved with any contact sport that could involve with me getting hit in the head. But my uncles, you know, pretty much they convinced her to, you know, allow me to play because, you know, they said, you know, it's good that he's interested in some things now because he might not be interested in anything later in life, so give them a chance. And believe it or not, my first experience playing football, I wasn't all that tough. I was actually really scared, and it wasn't until my little league coach kind of pulled me to the side, and he was like, hey, he told me to take my forearm and hit him in his chest as hard as I could, and I did. And, you know, he kind of fell back a little bit, but he got up and said, hey, look, you didn't hurt me. So you can hit me as hard as you want, or you can hit these other kids as hard as you want, and it's not going to hurt them. He said, now let me hit you. And I'm kind of, you know, braced myself, and he hits me. It started in my chest, rose up through my chin, lifted me off the ground, and the first thing that hit was the back of my head on the ground. And I'm like, you know, the air was knocked out of me. You know, tears came to my eyes. He picked me up, kind of dusted me off, and he said, now look, you're not dead. You're not injured. And I'm thinking to myself, I am injured because you knocked the wind out of me. But he said, but you survived. So, you know, go out there. Don't be scared that you're going to hurt somebody. Just, you know, play and have fun. And from then on, that's when the light switch clicked on. And, you know, I was able to do what I was able to do.
Yeah, that's an interesting lesson, you might say, and an interesting way to deliver it, I guess, too. but it went the right way for you, and you were able to catch on to what he was saying and catch the illustration, and it made a big difference in your life. And I guess from that point on, what age were you when that happened?
I was 10.
10. And so I guess from that point on, football has been a real key part of your life right up through your professional career.
It really has. You know, I grew up in an area that very easily I could have, you know, taken the wrong turn and, you know, ran with the wrong group of kids. But because of football, you know, it kind of channeled my attention to, you know, doing something positive with my life instead of something negative.
Mm-hmm. And that's really not an unusual story, is it? I mean, if kids can find a sport to channel their energy, as you say, that can really keep a lot of them on the right path, or at least away from the wrong path. And,
yeah.
And it's one of the real values of sports that sometimes we might not think so much about. But if you can focus on football, it takes a lot of time to be a good football player.
It does. A lot of sacrifices that you have to make, because, you know, there was a lot of opportunities where I could have, you know, stayed, you know, downtown Louisville and ran around with my friends, or me deciding to stay out in J-Town, because mm-hmm. I went to J-Town High School during the time of busing. So I didn't go to any of the inner city schools in Louisville. I was bused out to J-Town, which is on the way on the outskirts of Jefferson County. And believe me, every opportunity that I had that I could stay at one of my friends' house that lived in J-Town instead of going back downtown, I did that.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting, too, that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you about going to J-Town, Jeffersontown High School, which is in the greater Louisville area, but certainly outside the downtown area. So that was as a result of busing at that time.
Yes, it was. J-Town Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Go
yeah.
Chargers.
That's right. Yeah, still a Charger. Always a Charger.
Always a Charger.
Yeah. Yeah. But then that contributed to your growth then as well as a player. And so as you came up through the ranks, then at some point there had to be a time when you realized or a coach realized for you that you can be something special here. You have some talent, some, in addition to your size and strength, you've got the drive and the talent to make something out of yourself as a football player. When did that begin to occur to you?
It probably wasn't until like my junior year that, you know, I started really coming into my own as far as, you know, being a player and, you know, making big plays for a team, that college coaches, you know, started to call the house. And because, you know, back then we didn't have cell phones. So and the only way they could get in contact with you was to call your home. And, you know, my mom would, you know, answer the calls and say, you know, this school is called or that school called. And I was like, I don't know why they're calling. But, you know, sitting down and talking with my head coach and stuff, and them explaining, you know, these schools are coming in because, you know, they want you to come play college football. And for a long time, you know, playing college ball wasn't a go. But, you know, the more I got into playing football and the more kind of, you know, exciting it got for me and the attention that I was getting from colleges, because my parents, there was no way that they would have been able to afford to send me to college.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that I could have gone was through a scholarship. So when that opportunity presented itself, then I was like, you know, really focused in. So by the time my senior year came around, you know, I was taking care of my academics the way I needed to, because playing football and academics go hand in hand. And I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to the University of Kentucky. There was other schools that was interested, believe it or not, and I don't know, there's probably a lot of fans out there who want to hear this, but Tennessee was a program that I liked a lot.
Is that right?
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they were a real powerhouse at the time. We're talking about mid-'80s.
Yeah, because I would have had a championship ring my freshman year and my senior year if I went there. But, you know, my heart, I felt that, you know, what the University of Kentucky had and was offering at the time, because when I was at UK and I went on my visit, UK spent over an hour talking about academics. UT only spent like 15 minutes talking about academics. And my mother was like, if you're going to go to college, you're going to go ahead and get your degree. And because, you know, that's something that you'll always have. Because in football, you could always get injured in your career and that would be over. But as far as education, you know, you would always have that. So that was kind of the deciding factor of me going to UK.
We always hear coaches talking about how important it is to connect with mom on recruiting visits. And obviously your mother had a direction in your life. That,
oh, yeah, huge influence.
Yeah, yeah. So emphasizing the importance of the academic workload and as well as the football. And, again, we talked about how much time it takes to be a good football player, and that's only intensifies in college, doesn't it? Especially trying to play major college football and juggle an academic workload. Let's go back to the decision to attend UK first, though. I mean, that was kind of the driving force then as far as tipping the scales maybe in UK's favor was the conversation about academics. And
yes. And, you know, like Barb Dennison and Bob Bradley, the director, and Barb is, you know, the assistant, you know, they really stressed the importance of education. And, you know, they, you know, set us up with tutors. And I mean, they really, you know, to me, it seemed like they really cared. And they, you know, made sure that, you know, we stayed on top of our studies by, like I said, you know, organizing tutors and us having check-in and putting so many hours of study hall in the program to make sure that we stayed on top of our education.
Mm-hmm. And Coach Claiborne was known for that, too.
At least, oh, yeah.
As far as those of us who knew him, just, you know, from his public profile, but from talking to people who did know him very well, he was a straight shooter, wasn't he, as far as that kind of thing? And, in fact, anything as far as your dealings with him. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Coach Claiborne, you know, he didn't play around. If, you know, if you had study hall and if you missed times, Mr. Bradley, you know, they would inform him that you weren't there, or one of the AGs would inform him that you weren't in class, and you wouldn't have, you know, you had to sit in the front of the class. You couldn't sit behind. And if you weren't there, then you were at Dombatrol at 6 o'clock in the morning, and Pat Etchenberry and Mike Florence would, I think, love trying to make you throw up to teach you that, you know, you're here not just to play football but also get your education.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry Claiborne really was a highly regarded, highly respected man, and not just for his success in football. So,
I think at the time we had one of the highest graduation rates among the football team. I think we was even compete with Notre Dame and Vanderbilt at the time.
Mm-hmm. And his teams, he coached through the 80s, 81 through 89, I believe it was his tenure. And that would cover your entire tenure as a player.
Yes.
And his teams were known for being hard-hitting, competitive teams. They had, of course, a couple of bowl teams there in the early 80s. The teams that you played on would certainly be described as competitive, even if you didn't have 8 or 9 or 10 wins in a season. But you gave everybody knew they'd been in a game when they played Kentucky at that time. What do you recall? What's your first thought when you think about your college years and playing football at Kentucky?
It was a blast. And I always tell my son how, you know, back in the Stone Ages when I played, you know, we always did stuff together as a team. You know, nowadays, like, we had a dorm that we all had to live in during football season. Mm-hmm. And with them, granted, my son lives at home, but now these guys can live off campus. They have apartments and stuff. And I don't think, you know, they have the closeness that we have as a team. When we did stuff, it wasn't something that was organized through the coaches. It was all the players getting together and deciding that we're going to go here together, we're going to go there together. And when, you know, we were out there playing, not to say it doesn't mean as much to the players now, but I know when we played, it meant a lot when we went out and go play.
Mm-hmm. And that is a part of life off the field. And just to come back around to what we were talking about earlier, you also have to learn to manage time and that sort of thing. We'll get to football here in just a second. But you have to manage that time as a student if you're going to be a student athlete in order to keep up. So that's, I guess, all part of the maturing process, isn't it?
It is. It's very much so. Like you said, you have to learn how to balance your academic time, your football time. And if you had a social life, then, you know, that was always last on the on your agenda. But, we had a dining hall that we had to it was in the basement of Donovan. And we always, you know, we had a walk through the six pack through campus to get to Donovan, and you know, you had a breakfast was only, you know, at a certain time, and you had to be there because there was a check-in. And if you didn't show up for that, you had to go down patrol for that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was all, you know, it was, I guess, part of growing up and being mature that you had to balance your time of academics and football and then social.
Tell me about your development then as a football player, because it's an age where, of course, usually as a freshman, you're still developing physically. It takes a little while to get going and move into a varsity role. Tell me about how you progressed as a player through your time at UK.
Starting off, I thought Coach Sharp, my position coach, was trying to kill me because of all the extra running and stuff I had to do. But I know deep down inside it was, you know, just his way of showing that he cared and he was pushing me because he's seen the potential that I had. And then, you know, rooming with Jerry Reese, who's, an older player, and he kind of took me under his wing and he was, you know, showing me, you know, this is how, you know, you need to go about doing this, or, you know, don't get involved in doing this. Just kind of being with the older players and them showing you the ins and outs of what you should and shouldn't do. Like I said, with academics, with Bob Bradley and Barb Dennison, them caring enough to make sure that, you know, you got with your tutors, you put all your study hall hours in, and by the time practice was over, you were so tired, you didn't want to go out and do anything anyway. So being, you know, having a social life, you know, that was even at a controlled time because we had curfew, so we couldn't go out and spend too much time getting into bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they sound like they kept an eye on you in a good way, but you're still allowed to grow up a little bit, too, as you're there and mature physically and otherwise. But now, moving on to the football field then, you're playing in the Southeastern Conference, and it had just been 2 or 3 years earlier that you were even having questions as to why these college coaches were calling. Well, now you're out there. Now you know.
Yeah.
they talk about how the game is – fast. You have to adjust to the speed of the game, and you did that in college and then again in the NFL. But tell me about the adjustment to major college football, because everybody comes through is a prospect or a good high school player. They wouldn't be there. So you're
right.
Playing against good athletes at these Southeastern Conference schools. What was it like first moving into a prominent role on the UK team?
during my redshirt freshman year, the first game that I got into, I believe it was against one of the Mississippi schools. And the very first play I got in, it was a third down situation. I go to rush the quarterback, and I'm about like a step and a half away, and he cocks his arm back to throw it. So I jump, and as I'm jumping, he throws the ball, and I'm in the air, and this is before targeting. I'm like thinking, you know, do I just land and wrap him up, or do I bring my head forward and let him know that I'm coming? And I bring my head forward, let him know, and I hit him and get a personal foul and get taken out of the game.
So, oh, no.
That was my first experience in playing. But, you know, just going against some of the guys in practice day in and day out, you have to be on your A game to compete against those guys. And we didn't really have the depth that, like, the players that Coach Stoops is bringing in now.
Mm-hmm.
So the first team, if you were going to be on that, you had to be one of the best players out there. And I always loved, you know, the competition of playing, and not that I have, you know, a nasty streak or a mean streak or anything, but I am, you know, very competitive, and when the opportunity that I had to go against the older guys and prove myself against them, I just, you know, was looking forward to doing it, and that kind of helped motivate me to perform at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Oliver Barnett, former UK All-American, defensive lineman, mostly a defensive end for the Wildcats, and of course went on to the NFL as well. And you mentioned the targeting rule, and I was going to get to that, so I'll just go ahead and ask you about that now. With the rules changes, it still seems to be an evolving process, to say the least.
Yes.
And players like guys that played your position, I'm sure, are still not quite sure about what they can do and what they can't. They're expected to obviously put pressure on quarterbacks and get sacks when you can, but at the same time, you don't want to cost your team some yardage either.
Yeah.
So have you thought about what it would be like playing in this age with these new rules?
It would be hard because, you know, not that we lay with our head all the time, but, you know, we try to, you know, put as much damage on the quarterbacks or ball carriers that we could at the time. And, you know, just so happens, you know, the top of your head, but with your face, you know, the top part of your face mask, you know, you can kind of lead in with that. And, you know, we would, like, hit and then suck the guys up into you and roll your hips and then try to drive them into the ground was, you know, a lot of the techniques that we used back then. And nowadays, I don't think you can lift the guy off the ground and drive him. You have to pretty much just, like, hit and spin or, you know, to be on the safe side as you're making tackles.
Mm-hmm. And going back through that UK era, the 87 team, 5-6 on the year, 88-5-6, 89-6-5, and as we mentioned earlier, very competitive teams under Coach Claiborne, not always the spectacular success of an 8-3 season or something
right.
like that, but at the same time, again, very competitive with the SEC schedule. What games stand out to you as you look back? If you got together with some of your teammates from that era, what games do you like to talk about with them?
Well, I know, like, with me personally, the LSU game when we played LSU in LSU, you know, Coach Claiborne always told us, you know, kind of watch what we say to the media. Don't give the other team any type of, you know, bulletin board material. But, you know, still being kind of young and full of myself, I kind of answered one reporter's question. Like, he asked me, like, with, I think, of Tommy Hotson, LSU starting quarterback, I said, I'm going to have him for lunch.
Oh.
And then Coach Claiborne got wind of what I said, and he said, he pulled me to the side, he said, son, you better have the best game of your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately, I was able to go out and I think caused a fumble, recovered a fumble, had two quarterback sacks and, you know, a bunch of other tackles and so. So I like to think I, you know, kind of back up what I said, but, you know, we didn't score enough points. In the offense, you know, LSU had a great defense. It was kind of hard for us to put on points and stuff. But me personally, I felt, you know, that was one of the better games that I played. Getting with the fellas and stuff. I know Alfred Rawls likes to talk about the Georgia game
mm-hmm.
when he made that spectacular run and scored a game-winning touchdown. I don't know if a lot of people noticed or not, but he went the wrong way.
On the play.
On the play. Uh-huh. Everybody in the stands knew what we were doing. Georgia, all their linebackers, everybody, they knew where he was supposed to go. He ended up cutting back and going the wrong direction and juked out everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we, thank goodness, and we ended up winning the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure there are a lot of great memories from that time. There were, you know, you played with some great players. Tell me about some of your other teammates that fans will remember. And it was a good era for Kentucky football.
Yeah. Probably the first one that comes to mind is Damani Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about a fast player and a strong player. I had, like, the whole time I was at UK, we only matched up to go against each other once in practice. And it was the best 2 out of 3. And the very first time we lined up, coach called a pull play or a hook play for him, you know, to hook me. And he got out of his stance so fast that I was still in my stance when he took off. I looked over my shoulder, my position coach, he was like, don't look at me. And so I said, all right, let's do this again. And we got down the second time, and they called a drive block. And when he came straight ahead, then I knew exactly what he was doing, and I came off the ball. I took my forearm, and you could do the forearm shivers. And I caught him under his chin, and I stood him straight up. And I rocked him back, and I twisted him, and he ended up, you know, kind of laying on his back. And I looked over my shoulder, and my coach again, I smiled. He's like, all right, let's do it again. And then the next play was a pass rush play. And I say I won, but everybody I say it was a tie.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
go ahead.
You have that the positive memory of the third deciding play. There.
Yes.
of course, Damani Dawson was a great player at UK, and then went on to what seemed like an even better career in the pros.
Yes.
Did you? I guess you kind of had that inkling of working with him every day that he could be that kind of a player in the pros, right?
Oh yeah, very mm-hmm. much so. It was funny because when he was at UK, he was an offensive guard, and when
mm-hmm.
he went to Pittsburgh, they ended up making him a center. He was doing so well that they would have him lead off on pull plays, and that was rare in the NFL where you have a center lead on a pull play to an outside run. But, you know, he was just that athletic, that fast, and that instinctual of a player that he could pull that off.
Mm-hmm. What do you think made you a good player, a kind of player that would be a professional caliber? I mean, we've mentioned you know the size, and but there are a lot of big people out there, so you
yes.
can't just rely only on that, especially as you go further up the ladder. What did you work at? What helped you separate from others?
It was, you know, just the hard work of you know, that goes into preparing yourself for football. I always believed in And then I try to make football fun for myself. I always play the game inside of the game. Like I would go in, making little small goals for myself for the game. You know, I would try to get, you know, so many tackles behind the line of scrimmage or run down so many plays from the backside or not allowing a play to being ran to my side for more than 2 yards. So I always kind of, you know, try to work within the game plan that the coaches had, but then also have a, you know, play a game myself on things that I would try to accomplish during games.
What do you recall about the UK football career coming to an end? It's there's always a senior day for everybody. Eventually, you get to that point where it's time to go, and the bonding, as you mentioned, football players work awfully hard and they do an awful lot together. These guys have become your friends and really more than friends in many cases because you've been through so much together. How did it feel when it was all coming to a close?
It was bittersweet. I was, you know, excited that the possibility of me having the opportunity to play at the next level by going into the NFL. But then me leaving a lot of the guys that, you know, the last 5 years, because, you know, being redshirted, that I was going to be missing those guys and not being around them. And some guys having an opportunity to play at the next level and then a lot of guys not having that opportunity to play at the next level and everybody kind of going off and doing their own thing. I remember we used to sit around and talk about how once we were done, we were never going to come back to Lexington. But by the time, you know, once we all graduated or, you know, our senior year and everybody kind of went their own way, when I ended up coming back to Lexington to live with my family, there was a lot of guys that was back here too. Mm-hmm. And we kind of, you know, joke around when we get together about how when we left Lexington, none of us wanted to be back. But Lexington, you know, such a great town. A lot of us end up coming back anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you did go on to the pros and drafted in the third round and in 1990, right?
Yes.
And so you had to prepare for that. Your senior football season ends at UK. Tell me about that time in between then and the draft. What happens and what are your feelings as you go through that getting ready for the draft?
The day of the draft is nerve-wracking. But, you know, leading up to it, you know, just trying to decide on the agent is, you know, a pain in the butt because, you know, so many of those guys will tell you what you want to hear, mm-hmm. not necessarily what you need to hear or what they can actually do for you. But then, you know, going through that and luckily enough, you know, I had enough people around me that gave me good advice about, you know, saving money and living within your means and not, you know, trying to live high off the hog and try to support everybody and everything that's going on. And luckily, I was fortunate enough to, you know, play injured free. I ended up tearing the ligament in my ring finger my senior year in college. So, I didn't get hurt in the pros or anything. So I was pretty successful there. And then just, you know, the season in the NFL is nothing like college. You don't have the, you know, the rah, 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 let's go win it for the, you know, the Gipper. It's, you know, it's a business. And the people that's involved with the NFL treat it as a business. And if you don't have that mindset, that kind of will end a guy's career sooner than later because, you know, they don't make that adjustment. They take things personal, and you can't do that. And then, you know, injuries, they don't really give you the time to properly heal. If they can get you back out there, they'll get you out there as fast as they can, regardless on if you're truly healthy or not. Was a big adjustment. The money that's involved with it, they'll be more than happy to give you, but then they're more than happy to take it away from you by, you know, finding you and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed the NFL, and it was an opportunity for me to improve my life. Make some improvement in some of my family lives and my kids' lives. So I'm very thankful for that. But I think if I had to redo it again, I would definitely go in with a much better, more, grown-up attitude about playing and, you know, who knows how, you know, it would have turned out even better then.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking back to it, it's hard to know in advance that that's the kind of approach or attitude that you needed. I mean, you're thinking, as an athlete, you're thinking, well, I'm getting an opportunity to play at the very top level, and I'm going to be well paid if I make it, and all those things are very, very exciting. But the NFL, those people have a lot of difficult personnel decisions to make. If you slip up somewhere else along the line, you're making that decision easier for them. And,
and
they'll make those easy decisions and say goodbye, won't they?
Oh, yeah. They, you know, they say, well, you can never lose your position because you're injured. Believe me, if you get injured and the guy behind you is playing as well, if not better, than you, and if he's younger and he's getting paid less money, he's going to keep continue to play in next season. If he continues to get better, and then when they draft that new class that comes in, you'll be out and the young guys will be in.
Mm-hmm. Does that affect your relationships with your teammates? I mean, you all know that that's how it is. Can you still establish the kind of friendships and relationships that you would have had, not being about the same as college, but on a different level? Is that possible?
Yeah, it is. Once you make a team, then you guys kind of bond a little bit. But when you're a rookie and you're coming in and you're competing against a guy who might be friends with other guys, either on the, you know, in the same position or offensive players or defensive players, depending on your position, it's dog eat dog. One of the tricks that the veterans play on rookies is, like, you go out to a club or whatever, you got some downtime, and, you know, you might be having an adult beverage, mm-hmm. and you're doing, you know, they're ordering shots and they're drinking water, but yet they're giving you the alcoholic drink. So by the time practice starts the next day, you have a hangover and they're as fresh as daisies. You're over, you know, puking your guts out and stuff and not being well rested to get ready to go for the day. And the coaches look up, you know, they look at that and it's like, you know, you're not being professional. Mm-hmm. You have to know better. And the older guys are, you know, they're snickering, laughing. But, you know, once all that is said and done and the final cut has been made and the guys that make the team, then everybody kind of rallies around each other because now, you know, you have to play together. And so, you know, that way, you tend to make friends a little bit, you know, you're accepted more once you make it than when you first get there.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the first NFL game. I mean, we talked about adjusting to the college play and in addition to the football, just the spectacle of the whole thing and being an NFL player and realizing that, you know, when you started playing football at age 10 and now here you are at the very top level, what was that like for you?
It was nerve-wracking. Okay. I thought, you know, being, you know, playing at the college level was pretty intense, but when – you know, you have, you know, the reputation of the NFL and millions of people watching you, it's a bit more nerve-wracking because now, you know, you're at the highest level that, you know, you wanted to be at in the profession that you're playing. And it's just, it's unbelievable. And, you know, with me going into games, I was always, you know, had a little butterflies, but once I get that first little bit of contact, then all that kind of washes away. My old, you know, the skill set that I've, you know, learned over the years kind of kicks in, and then all it is just playing football after that.
Mm-hmm. Right now we're recording here in mid-November. If you're an NFL player at this time, I guess it depends on whether your team is having a good year or a bad year, whether you're in contention or not. But how are you feeling at this point of the year? Because you've been through, 9 or 10 ball games, I guess.
Yes.
And so you're feeling the impact of that. But what's this stage of life like for – stage of the season like for NFL players?
Sore. You're sore. You're not as young as you used to be or, you know, when you were in your early 20s when you were in college. You know, you don't bounce off the ground as easily as you did then. So you spend a lot more time in cold whirlpool tubs or in hot showers getting, you know, massages and stuff or going to see a chiropractor. Just because, you know, you're getting older. Guys at the NFL level, they're moving a lot faster. They're a lot more aggressive. And just, you know, psychologically, there's a lot of, you know, wear and tear on your mind about, you know, making mistakes or making, you know, trying to make big plays for your team. So mentally and physically, you know, you're more beat up.
Mm-hmm. You, speaking of reaching the top level, you reached the top of the top when you were with a Super Bowl team with the Buffalo Bills playing in January of 1994 in the Super Bowl. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was wild because I had just left Atlanta to go to Buffalo, and they had just built the Georgia Dome. So I had a year with Atlanta where, you know, I was in the home locker room, but then going back and being with Buffalo and being in the visitor's locker room was kind of wild, but it was exciting. I got to see, you know, a lot of friends that, you know, lived in Atlanta that came and was there to support and watch the game and stuff. But it was freaky. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, I was fortunate because a lot of guys go throughout their entire career and never make it to the playoffs. And I was fortunate enough to be all the teams that I played with all played in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the postseason is not something that's automatic. There have been a lot of great players go through the NFL and not reach a Super Bowl or sometimes even playoffs, at least not often.
Right.
And, of course, the Super Bowl itself is such a spectacle. 2 weeks of solid hype, and at the same time you're preparing for the biggest game of your life too.
Yes.
Is it easy enough to – or can you balance the distractions along with the preparation?
Well, you know, they kind of – with the team, they kind of take you away from, you know, all the – hoopla and stuff that's, you know, in the city. They try to get you away from it as best they can. You know, they got security all over the place, so that's kind of keep people at bay. But, you know, they still, you know, it's a pretty special moment to be there. So they kind of, you know, they give you a couple of days to enjoy it, not to go, you know, too crazy, hopefully. But, it's, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If you get a chance to do it, then you should definitely take full advantage of it. Like, my son, you know, teases me a lot because with him being at UK, them going to bowl games, you know, he would always, you know, show me his rings and stuff. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. You know, when I played, they only had 12 bowls, so it wasn't like we had any automatic tie-ins with anybody. And as he's, like, you know, walking around the house, I'll go upstairs and open my little jewelry box. I'll come back, and I'll – you know, flash my hand. I said, "Do you have one of these?"
That's so, going to be hard to say. Yeah. I think you may have him on that one.
Yeah.
You'd have a lot of people on that one. So you got to play in the Super Bowl, and I wanted to ask you about some of the NFL matchups. Now you're going against the best of the best, and you're, of course, among the best of the best, too. You believe in yourself as a player that you can get the job done, but tell me about some of those NFL matchups that were memorable for you.
I think my rookie season with Atlanta, and we had our first, one of the first games was against Cincinnati Bengals, and Anthony Munoz was still playing for Cincinnati. And we had a stunt call where I was a slant down inside to the B gap, and Anthony Munoz was pulling on a play. And I come out right off the guard's butt, and as he was crossing the center, and I hit him, and I'm sure he probably doesn't remember this, but I like lifted him up off the ground, drove him back, and pushed him into the running back and made the tackle. That was probably the biggest moment of my NFL career.
Yeah, because you're going against somebody, and every rookie professional athlete experiences this, but that's somebody who was playing when you were back in high school.
Yeah,
He'd been around for a long time, and so now you're actually competing on the field. And then,
And
it's a memorable play for you. Well, I'm sure you had a lot of them like that in your seasons in the NFL. And I wanted to ask you about one statistic. There's a one in the touchdown column for Oliver Barnett in professional football. Tell me about that play.
I was with Atlanta, and we was playing against Tampa Bay, and it was end up being a pass play, and I'm rushing in, and then Mo Gardner, our nose tackle, we both was, you know, coming in on quarterback. He hit him. He got there just a step before I did. Hit him, jarred the ball loose. It bounced right at me. I scooped it up, ran it 75 yards back for a touchdown. Now what I did was there was nobody in front of me, and I was looking at the pylon, and I could see out of the corner of my eye one of the offensive linemen running after me. I started off in a forward lean, and as I'm running, I'm slowly grabbing, it's pulling me back, back up with it. I'm like, just make it to the pylon. And as I'm running, I'm, you know, starting to get tired, and the pylon starts moving. I'm like, oh. And I'm thinking to myself, if this guy catches me and tackles me, I can stop running. But he never does, and I finally make it to the end zone, and I collapse. The only bad thing is I had to turn around and go right back out onto the field because I was the end block it on field goal.
Okay, right back out there.
Yeah, go right back out there.
I guess you probably couldn't take part in the celebration of the touchdown too much either. Just got to get your breath after that.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was a great and memorable play, and a guy in your position, you don't get a chance to do that very often. So
it's nice to
have that one in the memory bank as well.
Yes.
Now, after the end of your NFL playing days, you played in Spain for a year?
Yeah, I went one season overseas, went to Barcelona. I was the very first pick overall, you know, that year, and we ended up winning the World Bowl that year as well.
Yeah. Now, when you left the NFL, what were the circumstances there? Was it just a matter of just not matching up with what the team needed at the time, or was it just the offer from
I was pretty much at the end of my career playing in the NFL, and my agent called me and said, hey, there's a chance, there's opportunity for you to play in the World Bowl if you would like. And, he was telling about the teams and stuff, and I'm like, okay. And, told me about the amount of money that I could make if I went over there. And I'm thinking, it's an opportunity for me to, go overseas. Mm-hmm. I've never been there, and, I could see it, as a paid vacation. Luckily, I was drafted by the Barcelona Dragons, and, it was almost like playing on a Florida team, in that league. So I was very excited about that. Like I said, we ended up winning the World Bowl, got to play with two great players that end up going into the not a supplemental, but end up having an opportunity to play in the NFL. John Kitna, the quarterback, and Leroy, I can't think of what his last name is, Glover. Both of those guys got to go on and have very successful NFL careers.
Mm-hmm. And just for the experience of it, too, I mean, it's nice to have the offer and play professional football, continue to play for another year. But all of a sudden, you're in Barcelona. Now, of course,
yeah.
By this time, you're an adult and you've got 6 years of the NFL behind you. You've played in a Super Bowl. But this had to add to your overall football experience, I would think. What did you think of Barcelona, the whole culture and the difference there?
Oh, it was very nice. The younger guys, it was like an opportunity for them to showcase their skill set so they could, NFL teams would give them an opportunity. And I was, being the old man on the team, it was kind of, I was kind of like a player coach where, I would, express, this is how, this is the mindset that you have to have when we're here. This is the things that, we need to do as far as preparing ourselves, for games and, this is what, how we should, go about representing ourselves in Barcelona because, we're, United States citizens playing, trying to make, the NFL or, American football popular, over here in Europe. And being with Barcelona, the owner of the hotel that we stayed at almost treated us like he was the owner of the team, but he was just the owner of the hotel. But from the front door of the hotel was 12 steps to the beach, and so we spent a lot of time on the beach.
Sure. Yeah.
And like he would, have the team, at the wins and stuff, come out to his farm. He had a cattle farm, and he would have big cookouts for us, and he would have champagne and cigars and stuff, and we would kick back and, just have a great time. Yeah. And, like, we got a chance to go to London, had a chance to go to Germany, just a bunch, Scotland, a lot of places I would have never gone before if I hadn't accepted the opportunity to play in NFL Europe.
Yeah, so just a great opportunity, it sounds like, and it sounds like you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
and now have that as part of the resume as well. Now, currently, of course, as far as football is concerned, you mentioned being the parent of a player, your son Elijah, at the University of Kentucky. So you're a fan and a parent.
Yes.
What's that been like? Because being a fan is one thing. Being a parent of a player is it's entirely different. You're in the stands watching, but from a different perspective.
Yeah. Grant, I would love, if he had, was playing a lot more, but he, he's accepted his role as a walk-on. The life of a walk-on is, very hard and difficult. He's lasted his entire time at UK. It could have been very easily for him to say, Dad, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just going to go to school and not worry about playing football. But he really enjoys playing football. It's not like I was pushing him to do the things that I did or anything like that. You know, I let him be, you know, his own person. Like I said, he enjoyed it. Coach Stoops and the staff at UK, they, you know, showed their appreciation to him and the other walk-ons, the guys who really make an effort in practice to prepare the teams for, you know, upcoming games by allowing him to, you know, dress for home games, go to the hotel, which, you know, it's a big deal because, as you know, shows that, you know, they appreciate the hard work that you're giving. He was on a poster, him and two other players, that was honored as being scout team players of the week. So, I mean, he's, you know, like I say, it would be nice if, you know, we seen him on the field. But, you know, he's been honored. He's been respected. The guys on the team, you know, they respect him and, you know, like him and stuff. Him and Josh were really good friends. They came in together. Elijah was redshirted. Josh wasn't. Elijah would always tell me how much stronger than Josh he was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would, you know, kid back and forth, you know, when they would talk and stuff with each other. And because, you know, because of his relationship and being on the team, we've had an opportunity to meet, you know, some of the players, you know, kind of get close to them more so than what, you know, a regular fan would be able to do. And, you know, we appreciate it. I'm sure that we kind of talked about, you know, how the end of his career is coming up and, you know, what he remembers and likes and dislikes and stuff. But, you know, he's kind of bittersweet, too, with him.
Sure. And he says that in his bio on the UK webpage that you are his sports hero because you taught him everything that he knows, and you're the GOAT, which now means, of course, greatest of all time.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because whenever I tell him anything about football, he tells me to be quiet. He you know, he listens to Coach White. He listens to Coach Hood. He listens to everybody. And then I'm like, Elijah, I told you that back when you were in high school. That's not what you said. I said, yeah, that's exactly what I said. So he tells me that the other coaches are telling him things, which I'm glad he's listening to them too. But it's nice to hear that he mentioned it and it's on radio, so you can't deny that he had said it.
That's right. It's on record now. And I guess being an SEC legend is great. Having your son say something like that about you, that's even better.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, their listening skills get a little better as they mature.
Yes.
So the high school, you probably weren't as smart as you are now, at least in his eyes. So that'll improve, too, as they get into adulthood. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your current work with Fayette County Public Schools.
Yes.
And you're an employment trainer. Tell me about that.
I'm an employment trainer. I work with students with special needs. We help them make the transition from school going into the workforce. We find job sites that will allow us to come in and let the students develop their job skills. This is for a grade. It's not like, you know, they're getting paid for it or anything like that. So we're not, you know, preventing someone from having a pay position. They're doing it for a grade, and like we'll have like four sites out of the year for like 8 weeks out of the year at each site, and I mean, it's a great opportunity because a lot of these kids, you know, they would never have the opportunity to work if there wasn't somebody who was advocating for them to allow them to come in and at least get job training. Some of these kids, they receive some type of government assistance, and that's all they've known, and that's all they think, you know, could, you know, the life for them. But, you know, they can go out and work. It takes a really special business owner who, you know, would take the time to and allow us to come in with the kids to work with them. And a lot of times, when our kids do get hired, they're very loyal employees because they're not out there trying to seek, you know, another job where they can make, you know, more money or anything like that. They're happy that they're working. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they'll become a very loyal employee and they'll be with a company forever.
Yeah. And that's also the kind of thing that, from your standpoint anyway, it's you can see success. I mean, you have a track record. You see young people who have gone on to achieve things that maybe they thought they couldn't achieve or maybe others thought they couldn't achieve. That has to be very satisfying.
It is. There was a young man in our program who was in a wheelchair, and all he could move was, you know, with his fingers where he could manipulate his chair. We took him to Walmart or one of the department stores, and we went to the owner And we said, look, you know, there's a we call this thing called job carving, where we pick out like little things in a business that instead of you having like department managers be responsible for these things, you know, we can create something for our students for them to do. And what we did with our tech program, they built a wagon, a basket that they could hook onto the back of the student's wheelchair. And we, you know, we're always, you know, with the students, the supervisors, make sure they're doing what they're doing. But we would have, we talked the manager of the business to let the student drive around to each different department. And whenever there was items that was out of place, they could put it in the student's basket. And then he could drive around the store once he familiarized himself with the different locations of the different departments. And then he could take the items that was misplaced, take them back to the section or the department where they belong. And then the workers could then let's unload the basket and then restock the items that were misplaced. You know, you have shoppers that go around, they'll pick something up, drive, walk around with it for a while, then decide that they don't want it, and then just place it anywhere. Where our student would go around and then he, you know, collect all those things. And like I said, then take them back to the department. So he was like our poster boy for our program to show that, you know, looking at our students, they might seem like, you know, they're not capable of doing something. But if you give them the opportunity, there's no telling what they can do.
Yeah, and it's not just a task. It's something that the store or the business needs to have done. And
exactly,
so,
yes.
They're doing it. They're contributing in a valuable way.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we congratulate you on that and wish you well with that work. And Oliver, thanks so much for coming in and being part of our podcast. Oliver Barnett, former UK All-American defensive end, former NFL player. And we appreciate you sharing the experiences with us today and enjoy the conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.